This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Scalina. And Adam is away for one more week here, but he will be back next week. But don't fear, we have a phenomenal show today. We have Millen Mann. He is the President, Real Estate Development and Construction over at the BM Group. The BM Group, for those who don't know, is they're international, first of all. They're operating down the coast into the States, in Washington, in Oregon, and as far away as New Delhi. So that's kind of a first on the show. They have 22 brands under the BM Group banner, and they're a vertically integrated company. So anything from providing cement and steel to other builders, right up to developing their own buildings. The BM Group does it all, and Millen Mann has a deep insider's knowledge of that whole process. So it's exciting for the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast to talk to somebody like Millen, because we get kind of a behind the scenes on the challenges in the construction industry over the last couple of years, whether it's supply chain, labor. We talk about it all right up to, you know, our fall marketplace and where we're going and what he's seeing on the ground there. So stay tuned for that. I feel like I talk about this more if I had somebody to bounce these ideas off of, but I should mention a few things before we get on with the show. One is, of course, exciting news that the Fed cut their rate by 50 basis points just yesterday, which was a surprise to most. And the federal government announced new changes to the mortgage market. It's funny, right after we talked about all the regulatory layers upon layers since about 2016 with Dustin Woodhouse, this dropped. So the three kind of key takeaways, of course, are there is now a higher price cap for insured mortgages. So as the story goes, for at least the last decade, you had to have 20% down to purchase a home over $1 million, which increasingly it was feeling outdated as prices rose over the last decade or so. That has now been switched from $1 million cap to $1.5 million cap, which I think is great for people that are looking, especially in a place like Vancouver, for more of a family home. This levels the playing field. As we know, that down payment has been a significant hurdle for a lot of people out shopping. They've also extended the amortization period for mortgages for first-time homebuyers and on new builds, which again is a nod to trying to invigorate that pre-sale market in which we need some invigoration, if only to get shovels in the ground and get new homes built. And then last, there's been a challenge with people not requalifying when they come up for mortgage renewal with the stress test and them not being able to shop around for the best rates available. And now the stress test does not apply. I'm not a mortgage professional. I think all of these three things are very welcome news. And I think that's been kind of the take that I've heard across the board. So that's great. Moving on, we also are sponsored this week by the MLA Newswire Weekly Headline. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. The headline this week is project completions are nearing and could signal a buying opportunity for purchasers who don't want to wait. So what is the context to this headline from MLA? Well, many pre-sale developments that launched a few years ago, and there was a lot of launches a few years ago because the market was going strong, and it felt like a new pre-sale was launching every day and selling out. A lot of those are coming to complete this fall, And developers held back a number of those units. So they didn't sell the entire building. That's generally the case. They'll hold back some units to sell upon completion. As these buildings complete, a lot of developers have already listed some of these, the new buildings, or will be listing in the next couple of weeks. So what MLA is getting at here, if you're interested in new construction, but you don't want to wait for 2-3 years, you love the idea of knowing the market conditions you're buying in, knowing the interest rate environment and increasingly a positive interest rate environment that you're buying in today, or you have watched a building go up and thought, man, I really missed out there. I wish I would have bought 3-4 years ago. Now is your chance. You can go in. You can tap the countertops, you can look out the window, you can walk down the hallway, you can make sure it's the right fit for you, and you can buy without waiting. So there is a lot of new homes hitting the market this fall in which you can move in immediately. If you liked what you heard today, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com to subscribe now. And last but not least, this podcast is sponsored by our real estate team. That's the Scalina Real Estate Team in the city of Vancouver. And I just wanted to very quickly highlight one of our listings, 3171 Quebec Street, which is featured, as all of our listings are featured, on scalinarealestate.com, but also vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. You want to check out this listing. This is a spectacular west of Main townhome at Q16, 3 bedrooms, 3 baths, 2 parking, and your own private rooftop patio, over 400 square feet. This is a gem of a townhome in one of the best locations in the city of Vancouver. You want to check it out at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. And while you're there, hit sell with us. You can download our most downloaded document of all time. And I can't believe I got to do this all myself. It is the sold plan, which stands for start on launch date. It's basically a guide where you can work backwards to get your house or property ready for sale to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time. Like I said, the most downloaded document at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. All you have to do is hit sell with us. And without further ado, let's cut to our talk with Millen Mann, the president of real estate development and construction at the BM Group. Enjoy. This is a fascinating one. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland. We want to highlight 2 incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior 1-bedroom all the way to 3-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more. And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior 1-beds to 3-beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's Soenhaus. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes. Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Millen Mann, President, Real Estate Development and Construction at BM Group. How you doing, Millen?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great. Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
For listeners who aren't familiar with yourself and the BM Group, maybe can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I can give the quick elevator pitch. BM Group is a family-owned business, kind of came into the current form in 2011. But we are a group of construction companies based in BC with offices in Seattle, Portland, New Delhi, and Toronto. We are a service-based company. We have 22 brands under our group of companies, some spanning as old as 1928 and as early as 2020, I believe. And these 22 companies are kind of split amongst four segments we have. We have material supply, which includes things like precast, steel fabrication, and ready-mix concrete. We've got construction support services, which includes things like demolition, abatement, cutting, coring, scanning, and temporary labor. Then we've got structural restoration and waterproofing, which is pretty self-explanatory, but we do seismic strengthening, traffic deck coatings, roofing, usually on the specialty side of things with copper and specialty metals and plazas and deck coatings as well. And then finally, we are developers as well. We've been developing since the early 90s in single family, then transitioned into multifamily in 2004, specializing in wood frame. But given the complexity and scale of our group of companies, we've worked on a few towers and we've got one underway in Delta as we speak. So we self-perform our own contracting. And with the group of companies we have, we self-perform the work we can just to keep a handle on quality and the rest of it.
Wow. Okay. I feel like we could just take that answer and go for a couple hours. Maybe a couple days. Maybe, Milan, just thinking, I know it's a family-owned company or a group of companies out of BC.
Yep.
Why? So you said Portland, Seattle, and New Delhi, which for some people is going to be like, okay, kind of makes sense down the West Coast.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved in New Delhi and why?
Yeah, so we were Delhi. There's two things. One is a bit of a emotional connection. That's where my parents are immigrated from India, so we still have our family farm there that we visit quite frequently. But on the business front, we were working with the company that had now sold to us in BC. They were the material supplier, and they were doing pipe rehabilitation, so pipelining, and that was quite busy. As you can imagine, in India, the infrastructure is aging quickly, and you know, given how things are, you can't really excavate city blocks at a time because things are built on top of each other. So they were looking to exit from the service side of businesses while maintaining a relationship on the supply of material. So we were doing work for them in BC and the Northwest here, and they thought it was a logical fit for them. And we took over kind of right as COVID kind of kicked off, which wasn't ideal. But so that's been almost three or four year endeavor for us now. So it's twofold. It keeps us connected to our roots. And on a business front, it allows us to tap into a country that has lots of potential, and the scalability is there. It's just kind of ours for the taking. So yeah, on the map of companies and offices we have, it kind of goes the cluster here and then all the way around the world, but it's still well within our wheelhouse, and we're cross-training employees from here, and we're kind of finding the synergies kind of halfway across the world, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Just out of curiosity, developing in Metro Vancouver, like you guys are operating in the US, in a couple different states, and in Delhi. You know, we often talk about Vancouver as being kind of a leader globally in terms of the construction, especially density, multifamily, the type of construction we're doing. In your experience, do you find Vancouver's a leader, or are you taking a lot from those other markets and bringing it back here?
I think a lot of it, I think we could be. I think that we've kind of been riddled with a sense of complacency, if I had to be honest here. I think we could be doing a lot more with what we have. And I think a lot of that's kind of top down. When I look at India, obviously they've got the labor, they've got kind of, it's easier to do business there in some sense. And in the States, I think it's a lot easier. I just think from a cost perspective, the labor, especially in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, I think it's, you know, the cost of labor and some of the trades are probably a bit higher than we're used to here. But I think they make up for it in speed and lack of red tape. So I think we could be doing a lot better. And I think we're still a young city comparatively. I think we're not as dense as I think people would like to assume. They think Vancouver's a major city. But if you stack us up against even Delhi, for example, that they're building at such a high pace, and I think we're kind of falling behind. I think at one point that would have been true, but now I think we're kind of maybe stuck in a bit of a status quo and saying we probably got too comfortable for ourselves. And there's obviously a lot of macro and micro economic factors that play into that. But yeah, I think quite broadly, I think we could be doing a lot more and we're positioned to do that. I think we just need the resources and I guess the opportunity to take advantage of what we got here.
Right. Okay. This was the first question I had before we kind of got sidetracked. But Milan, from your perspective, how's the market?
I try to be optimistic when it comes to real estate, but it's getting tougher and tougher these days. We're closing a condo building in South Surrey right now, and you know, as you can imagine, there's people who, when we're pre-selling this project, they're a lot more aggressive with their investments, and now they might not be in a position to close, or they need extensions, and obviously, you know, money's tight for everybody on either side of the deal, right? So that's kind of at the root of the issue. So I think there's a lot of projects that are launching stalled. I think now is a good deal. I think if you're a buyer, now is probably the most balanced the deal is going to get. I think I'm hopeful things will turn around in the spring. But as I look at the project pipeline we have, we're closing one project, we're under construction on the tower in Delta. And then we're going to launch a wood frame townhouse and another condo project in Langley in the next couple of months. I think the value needs to be there. I think we'll get a number within reason, but I'm just not entirely confident in the absorption. And I think the people who have the money, they'll be able to justify that the numbers make sense, but I just don't think there's enough people with cash to spend. So I think that's going to where things are going to get interesting.
So, and do you, because we're talking as, and I don't even know, I saw it as I was literally setting up the podcast, but the Fed just dropped the interest rate in the US by a half point.
Yeah.
We've seen three interest rate drops this year so far. And there's some people have started to talk about, you know, a couple jumbo rate cuts. Is it interest rates that need to come down to get that absorption back up?
I think so. I think people just need that jump start in morale and kind of, you know, buyer confidence, I think it plays a large part of it. But the other thing too is, given how the market during COVID kind of spiked, all those mm-hmm. successful projects are coming to close this year, pretty much. That's kind of what it feels like. So I feel like there's a lot of inventory in these key pockets. So when a developer's, you know, looking at their numbers, they're thinking, well, I have to compete with the projects that are closing, and maybe they're taking a haircut, right? So if I'm pre-selling a project that's supposed to be 3 years out, the numbers are almost the same. And the costs are going up, the fees are going up, DCCs, all these, you know, so all these things are changing and increasing, but you're competing with resale product. So for somebody who's going to buy it, they can have something now, or maybe they want to park their money in 3 years from now. But I do think the Fed rate drop will help. But again, I think it's how many people actually have the money to spend. And I think that's still at the heart of the issue. We've got a big immigration number, but I'd be interested to see how many of those people actually have purchased homes or are in a position to purchase homes. I mean, you know, we're lucky to have people come to our province and our country for sure. But I don't know how that's translating into sales.
Right. You know, before I go there, you've kind of mentioned a few different times, like one, you have some potential challenging completions on a project. There's increasing inventory in those pockets, around a lot of SkyTrains, right? Like a lot of where the kind of transit oriented development
that's right.
happened. You also mentioned that in the next couple months, you're launching a project. Like, is it just the size of BM Group that you got to keep churning? You're launching new projects. Is it, or do you actually see there being opportunities to launch projects in the next couple months?
I think there's two parts to that question. One is we're builders. So we have, you know, 14 projects in the pipeline. So when things are scheduled to go, you know, markets up or down, I think things usually balance out by the end of the project for us. But I think we're builders, so things we have to keep going. I think once you have the machine, we have staff, we've got, you know, trades that are depending on us to keep them busy as well. So we try to keep things going. So I think a large part of it is due to the size and, you know, the complexity of our business that allows us to, you know, keep our construction timeline going. But the second part is, you know, a lot of these properties were purchased and planned for a long time ago. And now that we're coming to launch, you know, thankfully there's not a ton of competition directly neighboring us. There's a few projects wrapping up. There's some coming up for, you know, occupancy. So we're not really going shoulder to shoulder with product. And in Langley is kind of where we're launching in the next couple of months. Will the speed of sales be as quick as I like it to be? No. But I think we've got good projects in a transit oriented area. There's not a lot of competition there. So I think location's probably driving our motivation to keep the pedal on the metal. And plus we've got a few more things to launch next year as well. So I think for us, we don't want to be, you know, holding a lot of inventory either. So we're just balancing things out.
Right on. You know, one thing that strikes me, Milan, is with the vertical integration of your business. Two things. One is, can we talk about the construction side? Like what are the biggest pain points right now? You know, we heard a lot about labor, supply chain over COVID and post COVID, you know, obviously runaway inflation with a lot of the materials.
Yep.
Maybe kind of a two part, right? Currently, what are the biggest pain points? And can you talk a little bit about the last couple of years and where we're at now? Are we out the other side? You know, are things easier than they were? Just kind of a general conversation about the, you know, the construction side of your business.
Sure. I'll tackle one of them. You might have to give me a reminder of where to go from there.
Yep,
so I think
sure.
From the construction cost side of things, I think definitely in COVID, when COVID first started, I think a lot of subcontractors got caught in projects, so that maybe their material costs kind of went up and they had to eat it. And then the year after, the contract swung in the other direction and they were making up for, you know, supply chain issues and, you know, try to kind of put the screws to the developer on the other side. So I think where we are now, I think the pain points I'm seeing is staffing. And I think, you know, finding a dedicated team to build out these projects, like I'll speak personally that I have, is finding somebody that's going to be, I guess, loyal to a project pipeline, not just project to project, is kind of what's been challenging for us. But honestly, I think with the way things are going right now in the market, there's not a lot of projects that are actually under construction. Things have sold, things have gotten permits, but what's actually broken ground in the last 6 to 8 months is not a ton. So I think mm-hmm. a year and a half ago, I think people were struggling to compete with, you know, the best formwork crew, the best electrical contract. I think that there was a struggle there for sure, even when we were tendering our own tower. But a lot of those subcontractors as well, they're going to pick and choose between the guys that they've been doing work with, you know, the past 10, 15 years. I'm not going to take the new guy or the one-off guy. And I'm seeing that across the board. So I think now, because there's not a ton of projects going on, there's two things happening. Subcontractors are more available than they were a year or two ago. And two, I think they're going based on the strength of the developer because they want to make sure if they commit to a project, they book this out, that they're actually going to start and complete the project. I think they're having their money safe with somebody with some financial stability and a brand to back it up is probably front and center and front of mind for most of the subcontractors. And then honestly, given that we're in the ready mix business, that's not getting any cheaper anytime soon. So I see that from, you know, any angle. Yeah, the raw material side for concrete, be it cement or fly ash, that's always going up, and there's not a ton of local material that we can rely on a consistent basis. So again, that's just cost that ends up getting passed on to developers ultimately, and then homeowners from there.
You know, we've had, and it's usually people not in your position. I feel like you're kind of perfectly positioned to answer this question. Is there, you know, with inflation kind of coming down now and it being a better sounds like a better environment to build in just because there's not as much building going on, or at least that's part of the reason, right? Is there ever a world that it gets cheaper to build in Metro Vancouver?
I think there's still going to be that minimum kind of baseline number. I think the issue still is going to end up being is there enough people? I think at some point there's going to be a pickup in activity. So I think the mad scramble to pick up the skilled trades. And I think from there, it becomes a supply and demand conversation. So they're going to demand, you know, if you want the top crew, you're going to have to pay more for it, right? So I think, I don't know if it's going to actually get cheaper from a hard cost perspective, because I know the soft costs definitely aren't. That's going nowhere but up, it seems like. But mm-hmm. from a hard cost, I think it is a bit cheaper when we were running our initial budgets to where we are at now and kind of where we are when we broke ground. It did soften a bit, but I don't know if it's like a, maybe it's a couple percent correction. I don't know if it's anything like 5 or 10. I have a hard time believing it's going to correct that much, but I think it's definitely negotiations to be had. And I think that's probably a better position for both sides of the table, I think.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, is what's the more challenging, because you guys take projects right through, what's the yep. more challenging side, like the construction side or the dealing with the real estate market? Like do you see them in those kind of two polarized positions, or are they, do you see that as one?
Before I did see it as one, and now I'm starting to isolate them a lot more. And I think, like, I had this conversation the other day when we were, well, as we built townhomes, for example, we were usually constructing a few buildings at a time, put the presentation center in there. And 5-10 years ago, maybe we would charge a premium for move-in ready product. Mm-hmm. Now we can't get rid of that quick enough. And now that's just sitting inventory costing us thousands of dollars a month for each unit, right? So I think there's been a shift in that in itself. I think people are treating townhomes like condos. They want 8 months, a year out dates for these homes because maybe they need to get their funds in order, or that's just the timing to make the numbers work for them. But if we know that, then am I better? Why am I going to break ground any earlier to, right. to put the PC together to you know, get construction going ahead of pre-sales? If nobody wants to move in by the time the first block of buildings are done, right? So now I'm kind of revisiting our whole, like, our historical building pattern to say, well, maybe that doesn't make sense anymore. And for this project we're doing currently, we've already got, you know, 4 buildings done out of 70 odd units, and we are going to launch pre-sales in a month. But I think the initial feedback I'm getting from realtors is, yeah, we'll take phase 3 for sure, but phase 1, it's gonna be tight.
It's too close.
It's too close. Like, nobody wants to close in November if I'm selling in October, right? So then, as a developer, okay, I still have this number I need to achieve to make things work, and the buyer wants to pay this right now. Maybe they'll pay more than what I want if I give them the time, but there's still that difference there. So then we have to get creative. Are we gonna start looking at, you know, buying down their rate? Do we look at, you know, meeting in the middle or financing that 6 month bridge and kind of getting creative with how we achieve both things. And these are conversations we haven't really formalized and materialized yet, but this is something that we're going to have to figure out as we go to launch. So I think construction is challenging because there's roadblocks and hiccups that are bound to happen, but at least that's problem comes up, solutions right there, right? No matter how you got to throw time and money into it or both. But when it comes to the market, yeah, the temperature and the pendulum swing so quickly, but I think that's kind of the feedback I'm looking at now is people just want time, and we've got to make sure we're in a position to give that to them if that's what the feedback ends up being.
And is that, do you think, is it, because I feel like there's a couple different explanations for that. I don't know, like, presumably interest rates is a big, so this might for be, sure. Like, I wonder if, because, you know, historically, like you said, if you can actually, you're going to get top dollar if somebody can go in and, you know, feel the countertops and yep. look out and see the view yep. and everything else. But I wonder if this is just like a specific moment in time, or if it's that buyers are becoming more used to the idea of pre-construction. I don't know. Like, do you think this is something that is kind of a more fundamental change, or is it specific to 2024?
I hope it's specific to the point in time that we're in. Yeah. But the part I'm looking at is a lot of people from Vancouver, from the other side of the bridge, are trickling into the valley, right? So I think from a buyer's perspective, they're probably not even used to having a sale on site, like a PC on site, right? Like I think in the valley, we're used to having so much space and you can see multiple schemes. You can walk the property, or you can maybe the PC of the condo buildings on site. So you kind of familiarize where you live. In Vancouver, Burnaby, New West, you don't have that flexibility. You're probably two blocks down in a retail unit, best case, no matter the product type. Right. So I think as those people trickle into the valley, I think maybe they're used to doing that. And I don't think people that are locals and been living in the valley for that long, maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know. I could be overstating things, but I think there's probably a bit of both. And I hope, it's just a blip in the market, but these homes aren't getting any more expensive, and I don't think wages are keeping up with it. So if a townhouse all of a sudden costs $1 million, I don't know, unless they're planning to spend $1 million and the rate goes up or down. Like, I think that's something. I still think the time is probably, maybe they don't need 8 months, maybe they need more than two. So there's probably like a middle ground that the closing schedule needs to monitor. But yeah, I think it's a bit of both.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
But it sounds like it's the market where you're working with these buyers.
Yep. You gotta meet the buyers where they are, I think. I think otherwise, if it's a game of chicken, I think you're gonna end up losing a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Or waiting to make some money and end up losing some in the process.
Can we talk a little bit about the Fraser Valley? Like,
sure, yeah.
Why is that where you operate? Why do you like it? And what do you like about it moving forward?
Yes, for us, it's fairly simple. This is where our roots are. We've started here. Our trades have grown with us. So have our consultants. And given that we've been building in Surrey and Langley for almost 20 years, yeah, there's been turnover in City Hall. But I think we've familiarized ourselves with the staff and we know how things work. We can kind of, as best we can, manage the bureaucracy there. And I think that's what makes sense for us. If our trades are local, we understand the buyer demographic to a certain point, and we can get through City Hall within a reasonable time without banging our head into the wall. I think that's kind of the biggest things for us in development. And we've got, sure, there's plenty of opportunities to go to Abbotsford or Coquitlam or Vancouver or where have you. But I still think you're still going to charge a premium on the trades because at the end of the day, they're all coming from Surrey or Langley, right? So you're going to tackle on a few extra percent. There's not like the land's cheaper out there too. So we've land banked, where we are familiarize ourselves with, and that's just kind of been our bread and butter. Stick to what you know.
We always have a question. Well, we don't always. I always ask it, but for let's just put it this way. You have a niece and she's looking to invest in real estate. And she says, I am open anywhere in Metro Vancouver. Where are you most excited about? Where would you say, hey, this is a spot?
Yeah, I have those conversations. I like Surrey, but I don't know if I'm as confident in city center.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like Fleetwood is a good spot. I like along the kind of that transit future SkyTrain path. I think there's more upside there because at the end of the day, there's a lot of concrete going up, but I don't think the Valley buyer actually cares that they're in a concrete building or not. One, they might be investors. Two, the end user is going to be more price sensitive, right? So even from that point of view, if you can buy a wood frame project two blocks away from where, let's say, a concrete tower is, you're going to save some money, right? So if you're going to look at investing or this or that, I think the finishing is not any different. You might not have the biggest gym. But I think at the end of the day, I think that's kind of where I would suggest people, you know, look at is if there's a large concentration of concrete, look at the wood frame two blocks down. Or if there's a concrete plan, look at, you know, the wood frame two blocks down. Whether the wood frame comes before or after, I suggest, and I've been pushing people towards, you know, the Claytons or Fleetwoods or Cloverdales, or even Willowbrook and Langley. I think that pocket's kind of good for transit. Condo kind of, they're doing these junior twos. I think that's probably a good bang for your buck.
But so if I understand, focus on transit, but not the concrete high rise right beside it, but the wood frame a block or two away.
I think there's a better value there. And that's kind of why we've stuck to ourselves as building wood frame is because one, it's easier for us to build, that there'd be a better control on that. And two, there's not a big spread between the purchase price between concrete and wood frame, it seems like, right? So I think if you can save some money, why not? And they're generally in a good...
Yeah, are you saying save money? There's not the big spread between for purchasers? So it's saving
I think
so. On the...
I think it's saving on the purchase price because I think the average price now for a concrete unit in city center is probably closer to like $1,100 a foot, right?
Yeah.
And I think before the spread between wood frame and concrete was maybe $300-$400 it felt like at one point. Now I think things are selling in city center wood frame, you know, nines,
yeah,
high eights probably, you know, depending on the incentive package or whatnot. So it might not be, the spread might not be there, but the difference is still such where I think it makes it a better deal for the purchaser.
You know, you mentioned Surrey City Center and, you know, around $1,100 a foot for new concrete. We've talked on the show before about Vancouver, downtown Vancouver used to kind of dictate the prices, right? Like you'd kind of go in rings, yep, out, and that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case anymore. So BM Group is, you know, born and bred Fraser Valley. Does that kind of inform your understanding of pricing? Like, are you looking to Vancouver in that way? And does the pricing make sense to you, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, what you can buy downtown relatively new versus, say, Surrey City Center pricing now?
Well, yeah, I think we look at Vancouver as kind of the outlier. I think, I don't know how many people are spending $3,000 plus a foot. Right. I don't know,
right,
how successful that's going to be. So I think in the more realistic realm of comps, we're looking at Metrotown, Brentwood, New West, Coquitlam, City Center, Delta. That's kind of what we're looking at. And I think before, the spread was maybe $100 a foot as you go maybe every 10 minutes or mm-hmm. a couple kilometers from Vancouver, let's say. Now it seems like it's a lot more marginal than that. I think it almost becomes where do you want to live, and I think that's kind of driving the conversation, because I don't think the hard costs are differing that much between the two. Maybe it's a bit cheaper to build in Surrey than it is on the other side of the bridge, but we're definitely keeping a pulse on if Brentwood's selling at 1300 and City Center's at 12 something and we're selling in Delta, we know we have our number we have to sell at. But just because we're in Delta doesn't mean we have to sell much cheaper. How much of a discount is it for not being near transit, near a mall, or what have you? So I think Vancouver is still going to be an outlier, and I don't know how that problem or that riddle gets solved, to be honest.
Yeah. But
I think in the more communities are getting developed and further refined, I think that's kind of where we're looking for, where do we need to go? If Coquitlam's here, we need to be $50 less, right? Or $50, whatever the spread ends up being. But I think people are looking, from a purchase perspective, it's not that much further away, right? Like going from city center to New West, you're going over the bridge and the SkyTrain there. So I don't think they're probably similar in pricing. Same with Metrotown and Brentwood. Sorry, it's probably, I think, in the eyes of the investor, how much difference is it really? I don't know, and I could be oversimplifying it, but I think that's where the prices become more in line with each other, because it's just going from, I think it's just drive inventory and where you want to live is kind of driving the pricing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe just, you know, thinking about how large BM Group is, I'm kind of interested in presumably you have kind of projections of, you know, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, where the market's going. Like, is that something, are you putting together projections like that? And can you give us your best guess in terms of like, where are we at, say, fall 2025, and then kind of three and five?
Yeah, if I knew, I'd be a lot richer. I think fall 2020, I think that's probably when the rates will, I think some people are saying there'll be a full point drop by that point. That is what I've heard. Maybe it's half a point later, but I think there's definitely going to be a lot more transactions then. So I think it's going to be a lot healthier this time next year. But the issue we're going to have is a lot of these projects, I feel like they're going to have to do like cold starts. Like so many projects were shelved.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they got permits or things get delayed. So to rush to catch up to the market is kind of whoever's going to be in stream to be in line with the fall 2025. I think that's kind of a good place to be. I just don't know. Again, the absorption issue is still there. And I don't know which product types are going to move, right? Our townhouses are slow now, but will they pick up next fall? Is wood frame carrying the market? I that's kind of where I'm more interested to see. But I think as I'm looking now, I usually look at resale as a good indicator of what's to come. If once resale starts transacting and getting busier, then people start looking at what's new.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't really seen that from the resale just yet. And I've usually, Rennie's marketing a few projects for us. I usually get the data from them, and I'm kind of working backwards from there. So I think I'm optimistic for next year from a development standard. I don't know if it's going to be sunshine and rainbows, but I think it's definitely going to be a lot better than where we are now. But yeah.
And do you think so one thing, and I don't know if I'm reading between the lines here, but the absorptions come up a lot in this conversation. Do prices, like are you expecting prices by next year fall to be up? Because like what I'm just thinking of is, you know, absorption's kind of the X factor, but there's a lot of either stalled or shelved projects where presumably once absorption rates or sales volumes pick up, there's going to be a lot of competition. Like, do you see that playing out that way? Like, and what's your kind of take on how that plays out?
Yeah, I think the projects that are getting shelved because maybe the numbers aren't making sense based on what they're going to sell at. You know, I'm usually more interested in saying, well, they've got to densify this project to a certain point to make the numbers work, you know. But at the same time, if no one's going to, there's not enough people to purchase, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet, then what does it really matter, right? Like, I think it's going to get shelved from there. And you don't really know until you launch your pre-sale campaign and all of a sudden you sold 10 units over 3 months out of 300 units. You're kind of like, well, I don't think this is going to go very well. Let's just pull the plug and revisit it. So I think I think from a developer standpoint, I would still say the numbers got to work to get the project out of the ground. But at the end of the day, that's only half the battle, right? Like you can get that going, but I don't know. It's one of those things where it's kind of chicken or the egg, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned that you guys have banked a lot of land over the years. Yep. Are you still looking for deals? Are you still acquiring stuff at this point?
We're looking, and I think there's a lot of deals in the market. It's just a lot of people are selling bad deals or signing bad deals. So, you know, it didn't make sense for you. It's probably not going to make sense for me. And the other thing is a lot of people played hot potato with properties and all the juice is getting squeezed all the way time to when it comes to me, I'm actually going to build this thing out and what's going to be left, yeah. Right? So I think that's kind of the issue. And I think it's more prevalent in the Valley. And I said to somebody last week, it's like the age of like the recreational developer is probably gone. Like the guys putting a group together and building off the side of their desk probably isn't gonna cut it anymore because it's become a lot more capital intensive than they assumed. And you got to get your money out one way or the other. So I think there's a lot of deals to be had. We're still looking if things make sense. Concrete, wood frame, townhouses, we're always looking. I just don't think the sellers are stuck and I don't think they want to stomach being out of pocket on these larger deals. And maybe at a certain point they're going to need to, right? And mm-hmm. I just reality kind of sets in. So you can't wait forever, or you wait enough and then maybe you get another liquidity event and can inject some cash into the project and you can keep it going yourself. But I feel like a lot of people selling land had no intention of building it. And if you weren't going to hire somebody to take it through and build it, then the performer's got to work for whoever's going to cross the finish line with it. And I don't think that's kind of the misalignment I'm seeing in the land deals, especially in city center and kind of the Surrey market for sure.
And so just so everyone understands, a lot of these guys that are holding land, but without the intention to build, they didn't buy it 30 years ago.
They bought it 5 years ago, maybe less than that. Maybe when COVID and the deals, everyone's buying up everything. So I think they bought it at a premium or at a number that a developer would take and say, okay, I can make these work. If I can sell it this and it sells out in this time and I build it for X, I can make this work. But if you're a developer in the Lower Mainland and you just decided to park your money there and didn't really, you densified the crap out of the site and you paid all this money for bonus densities and all this, if you had no intention of doing that, then somebody's got to take that baton and pay for your design, or just say that doesn't work at all for me. Here's what the land values worth, and that might be what they paid for, if not less, or less than what their purchase price plus their carrying costs were. And I think that's kind of where the awkward conversations are at this point.
It strikes me, and I've never really thought about this. Or, well, I shouldn't say I've never really thought about this, but this conversation has really brought it to the fore. Like the riddle of downtown Vancouver, as you put it, that's like a riddle that was created out of 2017, right? Like that's when those prices, condos went up 30%+. A lot of that land was acquired and those assemblies that were happening at that time, they still don't pencil and the riddle. We're going to be maybe a decade of figuring out the riddle of downtown Vancouver. Maybe, who knows, maybe more, especially with the, all sorts of regulations that have come since then. But there's a second riddle that's kind of like the COVID hangover almost that you're kind of outlining, right? Like there's where the volume's just not there because guys bought at high prices and it's like we're still in kind of a holding pattern. And there's kind of two separate holding patterns going on in Vancouver or Metro Vancouver real estate.
Yeah. I'd agree with that for sure. That's kind of the two avenues is I would agree with that. And people get excited when they see the kind of the green sheet reports from different cities. Well, we have had this many permits picked up. And I'm thinking, okay, picked up and started is probably what you need to look at, because people picked up permits just to avoid a fee increase from Metrovan or somebody else. That's one thing. So I think the real driver of what's going to be the volume coming to market is probably who's actually put a shovel to the ground.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's kind of where a lot of these developers might be stuck, is they probably didn't rush to close under old fees. Now that's another extra couple million bucks, at least on some of these projects, you know, at a bare minimum. So then you got to make that work as well. Right. And again, that just adds to the purchase price. So if you already had a hard time with people, you know, feeling motivated to spend, now add another, you know, couple bucks to the square foot price, right? Like that's kind of what this translates to.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, a smaller field of people who can actually, you know, have the capital and can deal with the complexity.
Yep.
Well, it seems like you're pretty well positioned.
we're just doing our best, trying to keep it as simple as we can. I don't know. It's not for the, you know, the faint of heart. And I think that's why it goes back to my point of people like developing off the side of their desk. Like maybe 10 years ago, because land was cheap, you could pull that off and, you know, you could pre-sale like touch and go. But now everything's expensive. Everything takes long. Everything requires more cash. So I think unless you're into it and got the stomach for it and maybe have a large financing group behind you, then I don't see, like, I think this is going to become similar to the States. Like there's no, like, I don't see one-off developers. If you go to any other major city,
mm-hmm.
there's brands building hundreds of units at a time. And that's kind of where people go to. I think here, because land was so cheap and there's greenfield opportunities, people thought, well, I can make this work. I know a guy, we can pull this off. I just think strenuous the market has gotten, I don't think that's going to be the way of the future.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Milan. But we do have this segment called the Five Wire Five Lighthearted Questions to end the show. Do you have a minute to stick around for that?
Yeah, for sure.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform. Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects. Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly. And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market. So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
Okay, the first question is, one book you've read recently or not so recently that you'd recommend to our listeners?
I just started a book called Framers. I can't remember the author's name, but it's pretty much how you can frame your thought process, decision-making, and conversations you're having, just to, you know, everything is developed in a framework, whether it's, you know, people inventing planes or something. You got to open your mind up to how to approach different situations. And I think as I grow into my own career, dealing with people and opportunities and problems, you want to make sure you're thinking on at all aspects. So that's a book I currently picked up. Yeah.
Framers, kind of how to, sort of think about things and how to structure it.
Right. Yeah.
What is one new belief, behavior, or habit that has had a positive impact on your life over the last couple of years?
I think it's kind of stay true to who you are. And I think you kind of have to let people be who they want to be. And I think for me, it's just kind of being more self-aware and just be a good person. And if somebody wants to act a certain way or make a certain decision out of your control, just be comfortable in who you are. And then that's kind of made this kind of job a lot lighter for me, is just focus on yourself and what you can do, and other people's emotions are their issues at a certain point.
Right on. That's a good one. based on everything we've heard today, I can't imagine you have a lot of time for Netflix, but what have you been binge watching lately on Netflix?
That's a good point. With the limited time I have, I don't like the risk of starting something that I don't like.
Yeah.
So I just started watching Sopranos again, and I was like, this is a good show. It hits all the boxes for me. So started from scratch. I'm probably season three again. So I don't watch the last episode because it just pisses me off. But everything before that, I'm good for.
It's unbelievable. I feel like I have never watched... I don't think there's any other series I've watched twice, but I've watched The Sopranos maybe six times. Like it's so good. Sure. It's so good.
Yeah.
What are you currently listening to? Favorite band or music?
What am I currently listening to? That's a good question. I'm going to have to check my phone. I can't remember listening to a song. I think right now it's an artist called, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it right, Asake, kind of Afrobeats.
Oh,
artist, yeah, it's really good. A lot of collabs, and it's good energy. It's light.
Right on.
Some work gets too serious. You need something just to brighten the mood.
Before the last question, actually, just out of curiosity, are you traveling? Are you in New Delhi? Are you down the coast, or are you primarily in focused on the Fraser Valley?
Yeah, I like to stay put. My dad probably travels a bit more to Delhi than I actually haven't been back to India since I was one. So that's the kicker. That I was supposed to go, and I had my visas all set up. But my dad goes to Delhi probably every couple months, and he makes his presence there. But I usually stick to BC and up and down the coast. I don't mind hopping in the car and going for a road trip, but I like being at home and staying along the water for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the last question is totally unrelated. Something you have purchased recently for under $1,500 that has had that you'd recommend that has had a good impact on your life.
$1,500. I bought a new thermostat.
it's amazing how much better that can make your life. That's a good one.
Yeah, I would say thermostat and a new gym membership. That's a good one.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Milan. How can people find out more about BM Group, what you guys are doing, and also about what you have in the pipeline? I was on the website. I know you're in North Delta right now. I think that tower is selling. Can you tell us a little about what you got going on?
Yeah, so currently we're selling, we're under construction for our Tower Walker House in Delta, but we're still actively selling with our good friends over at Rennie at Walker House, located at 93 Avenue and Scott Road. To get connected with us, I think the best way is probably on LinkedIn or Instagram. Our username is BM Group INTL, and we're posting kind of our sales programs or launches coming up or how to contact our sales team all through there. So I think that's the best way to get in contact with us. And as far as the new launches, we've got Rowan, which is our project in Willowbrook, 133 condos, just steps away from Willowbrook Mall, and the SkyTrain, future SkyTrain, that we're launching that at the end of the month. And then we have Heath West, which is a collection of 67 townhomes in Langley by the Event Center. Those are townhomes that we'll launch that middle of October. So I think just stay in tune with our socials and you'll be sure not to miss our launch schedules, and register with us to get early access for sure.
Right on. Okay. Thanks again for your time, Milan. That was great.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Milan Mann, the president of real estate development and construction at the BM Group. I really loved having Milan on the show. I feel like he's such a bright guy, and there was a lot of takeaways. And it's always amazing talking to a guy who's kind of so dialed into so many different facets of the real estate industry. So it was a great conversation, and I hope you enjoyed. What else do we have before we cut for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live, including the live wire. This is our weekly mailer where we're sending out stats, different types of stats, You get sales ratios where you can dig into neighborhoods and different price bands to see exactly how those submarkets are performing. You get a deal of the month. You get the catalog. If you're missing what's happening on Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, you'll find out about it on the Livewire. We also have, of course, private client services. And again, I'm not sure I can do this by myself, but I'll try, because if you're not using private client services, you're standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, you get days on market, you basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. All you have to do is go over to vancouverrealestatepodcast.com and hit buy with us, and we will get you set up with an account. There's no better time to be monitoring the market. Interest rates are dropping. The Fed dropped yesterday. What does that mean for prices and days on market and absorption on the ground? There's only one way to find out. That's private client services. And last but not least, looking forward to having Adam back next week. But in the interim, if you want to talk about anything you heard today or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com or, of course, the Kokomo line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. We have a stellar lineup of guests coming this fall, and we will be back next week. Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.